views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Are you ready for the huge disruption that's coming to the banking and to Wall Street? Well, it's not any different than any other sector. All the sectors are experiencing massive automation, data integration that's resulting in fundamental changes in how their customers are served and how business is conducted. But in the financial sector, which they have coined as fintech, there is fundamental changes coming down the pike that is going to be affecting all of us. And, you know, here are a few examples. For starters, there are robo-advisors, meaning that there are applications that are allowing or that are advisors for average people. They assess your risk level. They figure out, you know, how old you are, what you need when you retire, and give you options on how to invest, and then actually do it all for you. And this could, and I think it will, eventually, as it becomes normal to use a tool like this, it could really replace financial advisors in general, and especially for the lower and middle class people. And Wall Street is salivating over this. They see it as a way to get everyone into Wall Street, everyone investing into Wall Street. Imagine everyone's money being harvested by Wall Street. That is something that they're excited about. But the other thing I want to use as an example is the banking sector. Think of all the crowdfunded loans that have potential. Right now, there are crowdfunded loans now where the average person can put money into a crowdfund, and then another average person on the other side can take a loan out against their mortgage or a car or even small loans to buy a television. And it's completely changing banking. And, well, maybe not yet, but it is. It's coming down the pike. And the big Wall Street banks, Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank and all these big banks are scared. They know this is fundamentally going to change their business because loans is where they make the money. So now there's going to be these middle people who are going to be making money in, you know, helping people match people up with people who need money to people who have money. And it'll be a completely different market. It'll almost be like the stock exchange for loans. So there's going to be all sorts of services and businesses that are going to come out of that. And it'll be pretty interesting. But today's guest is Marlon Weems, and he's the founder of Hillcrest Strategies. And it's a consulting and financial advisory firm that he has. But he has been looking into this whole fintech sector, and he's going to give us some ideas or some insights as to what kinds of disruption is going on in the sector and what kinds of changes that we are going to see into the future. So now I want to welcome Marlon to the program.
Hi, Marlon. Welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about fintech, and it's been growing a ton. And before we get into that, I want you to tell people what fintech is.
Sure, it's not as mystical as it seems. It's just a shortened version of financial technology, and it's actually not that new in the sense that right around 2000, 2001, and I'm sort of dating myself here, but the stock market moved from fractional quotes, and some of your listeners may remember that, to decimalization or decimal quotes. And as a result of that, it made it easier, and it sort of spawned a lot of innovation, and that's when you really started to see algorithms and people beginning to use electronic systems. And it was a lot, in a lot of ways, it was facilitated and I guess sort of spurred off by decimalization. All that to say that it really spawned a lot of financial technology. But
so it's just technology in the financial sector.
Yeah, it's just technology.
It's not a big deal.
It's trading systems.
It's not a fish's fin or something.
Well, you know, it's gotten to be somewhat of a big deal for some different reasons, though, as of late.
Well, there's been huge growth in the sector. And where are you seeing that largest growth? Yeah, well, what's really spurring it?
You know, in a lot of different places. One of the areas that I know a lot of your listeners will have heard about is with the automated asset or automated asset managers, which are commonly called robo-advisors. And they get a ton of hype. They've had a, I guess in some ways, sort of an outsized effect on the industry.
Is it really just an algorithm trying to figure out? It's giving you advice? Based on algorithms?
You know, it's really not a very good description of what they do, but as you know, I guess we all like our buzzwords, and so that's what they're known as. But in reality, what you have is an entity that's, you know, set up like a garden variety asset manager, except instead of you going in and sitting down and talking to them and, you know, meeting in some wood paneled office, what these guys figured out was that there's a whole subset, and you've heard, you always hear about the millennials, but there's a whole subset of people, you know, the millennial generation that don't really want to do that. And if they can't do it on their telephone, you know, on their iPhone or their Android, they don't want to deal with it. So what these guys did.
You mean they don't want to deal with going to a live person?
With almost anything. They don't want to bank the way we did and our parents did. They don't want to interact in the same way. And these guys, the reason that they were able to sort of seize upon this is that for the most part, the companies that are out there, like Betterman and Wealthfront, these guys, came from other lines of business. And so they sort of pivoted to this, not in every case, but in a couple of them. I mean, one in particular started off with a Facebook game called Ka-Ching and pivoted that into being what we now know as one of the bigger robo-advisors. Now,
well, are they good?
Here's the thing. That what they're doing is really just using, modern portfolio theory, which is not new at all. However, what is making them so, I think what's creating the buzz and sort of the value proposition is really the delivery. You know, so in the time that you and I have been sitting here talking, I could have downloaded an app from, you know, iTunes or Google Play or wherever, logged into it, signed up, and funded it probably, you know, within 5, 10, 15 minutes.
So it's not necessarily going out and analyzing the financial sector and then telling you what to do. It's really just an app to help you invest.
Well, it's an app. It's online. And I don't want to, sort of downplay it too much. I mean, they certainly do provide advice, but the way that it's delivered is in an, I guess what you could call sort of an agnostic way. You're not dealing with a person. So what you do is you go either online or you download the app, you fill out a questionnaire, and from the information that you provide, they're able to basically analyze your risk tolerance and some other important areas. And they have maybe 4 or 5 selections
it's an evolution of E-Trade and all those other online trading
really,
stuff.
In some ways it is. In some ways it is. But what they've done is they have adapted it to mobile technology, and they've made it very attractive to people who, you know, live their lives out of their mobile phone.
Well, I could see robo-advisors being useful in general if, you know, for people that don't want a lot of risk or if you're not, you don't have that much money to invest. But I'd get worried about it being good because it's only as good as the developers on the back end.
Well, at the end of the day, they're using some algorithms that are out there, that have been out there for a while, and they're not it's passive investing, basically, and they're not really picking stocks. They're using ETFs to create a portfolio.
Indexes.
Yeah. And so.
Well, those outperform stocks most of the time, right? The index funds.
You know, look, at the end of the day, I think each robo-advisor has what I call a little bit of special sauce that makes their set of algorithms different. You know, so I think you have to go into it as an investor, being, you know, just as cautious as you would, if not more so, than with a person, because it's all on you. And so if you feed it the wrong information, that's certainly going to affect the result that you get. Now, in terms of, you know, making it seem too easy, you've got, maybe a half a dozen different passive strategies, but there are a lot of things robo-advisors don't do. Now, I think they're probably, as time goes by, you'll see, you know, sort of a little bit of an evolution where the robo-advisors will start doing more things that you might expect to see from, you know, from a full-service asset manager or investment advisor. But right now, that's their calling card. And you touched on something else that's, I think key to what's made them successful. They were willing to, sort of build their assets under management by allowing people that didn't have very much money to invest. And I think that's actually important, in a positive way, because it's really caused a lot of people, you know, if you don't have, I don't know, maybe $50,000 or $100,000, you know, some of the bigger asset management firms or wealth management firms, they don't want your business. And these guys basically said, hey, you know what? If you got $500, you can sign up. If you got, you know, less than that in some cases. And so it became a situation where it brought a lot of people who really had never been involved in investing into the, you know, sort of into the mix. And I think overall, you know, that's a good thing.
Well, do you think that, like a lot of other sectors, do you think it's going to actually replace people?
No.
Because technology has, has replaced people everywhere. And if it's not a really high thinking, high functioning job, technology can replace it. And in some cases, technology can replace things that are pretty complicated because an algorithm can do it better than a human, you know, human can if it's developed right. But then you need an artist to come in and look at, you know what I mean? There's always that higher level thinking to come in and say, okay, this isn't.
And this is the thing I think, and this is certainly, you know, my opinion is that the answer to your question is no. And the reason, there are a couple of reasons why. One, we don't really know how in say, a really bad market, because a lot of this has happened. If not all of it, since the global crisis, the economic or financial crisis. So we don't really know what happens in one of those situations where, you know, the market just goes, you know, where and everybody's trying to get out of their robo-advisor. We don't really know how that algorithm is going to perform. As a former trader that has used algorithms in bad market situations, the result is not always pretty. So that's
what happens. So when everybody's trying to bail, what happens?
Only knows what it knows. And so, a lot of times, you know, when you get big gaps in market prices, they just simply don't function that well. And it's usually not a positive.
But why can't that be programmed out of it?
I don't
think large gap in these scenarios where there's large gaps, we will do blah. That's my background is computer,
system
design.
You can. But that's when you're doing a passive indexing strategy, that's really not part of the puzzle, I don't think. Now, you probably know better than me, because I am definitely not a computer programmer. But I will say this, you know, look at how the markets function and they've got the best computers in the world, and you've seen some of the flash.
Well,
crash,
we're not.
Et cetera,
we're not.
Et cetera, right?
It's too complex. We're not able. It's that's why I said it's only
exactly.
as good as the developer behind it, and it's just they. It's chaos theory, right? I mean, it's just too complex for an individual to be able to manage every little detail. Plus, I think that there's. I don't know. I'm a cynic, so I think that some things are manipulated, and then it causes issues.
Well, that's probably a whole another show we could go
well,
into that
you
show.
Know, it's pretty, yeah.
You are listening to Business Game Changers, and we need to take a short station break.
What if we really didn't have to die to go to heaven? Are you curious about the afterlife or rebirth? The highly anticipated new book from author Dr. Susan Allison, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, is available now. Find out how to find guidance and healing in the spirit realms. Order the book today and put it on your must-read list for 2016. Visit drsusanallison.com to learn more.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Has asthma or allergies got you singing the raspy blues? Allergy and Asthma Networks is the nation's premier nonprofit patient-centered network of doctors, caregivers, patients, and healthcare professionals who are dedicated to ending death and suffering due to asthma, allergies, and related conditions. Join President and CEO Tanya Winders each month on the Dr. Pat Show to learn more and visit AllergyAsthmaNetwork.org today. Breathe better together with Allergy and Asthma Network.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are in the middle of an interesting conversation with Marlon Weems about fintech and the innovations that are going on there, and we will rejoin him now.
Well, what other things do you see as really disrupting in this? You know, disruptive in this industry?
Well, just in fintech in general, what you've got is, you know, just across almost every sector of banking, there, you know, there is something. And maybe it might be better to sort of step back and give a little bit of the reasoning behind why a lot of this is happening. You know, it's not that the big bulge bracket firms and banks just suddenly sort of forgot, you know, what they're doing. There's sort of some mitigating circumstances, and it all goes back to the global financial crisis. And of course, we all remember that. What happened after that is, and it's still something that banks by and large are having to deal with. And by banks, I mean, you know, everybody from JP Morgan Chase to Goldman to even the smaller ones.
We haven't dealt with it, right? I mean,
That's just it. There is so much impending regulation that is sort of the, you know, attempted cleanup behind and so you're dealing with everything. And keep in mind, these, especially the largest banks, are global. So they not only have to deal with regulatory issues in the United States. So, you know, Dodd-Frank pretty much has been digested. But then you also have what's called MiFID III or in the UK and the EU, rather, or MiFID II, rather, and then Basel III. So there are all these different regulatory schemes that these guys are having to,
Are they similar? I assume they're similar, but is there some pretty big differences between them?
Well, with regard to MiFID II, it's, I guess the overarching theme there is around research and sort of unbundling research from commissions and making it all transparent. And, you know, there are other parts to it, and I'm not an expert on UK or EU regulation, but that's the way I see it. And there,
well, isn't our biggest issue the derivatives, though? I mean, taking charge of that, figuring that out?
It is an issue. I'm not sure it's the biggest issue anymore. I think,
our debt is a big issue.
Well, yeah, that's definitely, and there are just a lot of things, and it's almost like a perfect storm that sort of, happened right there when we had the global economic crisis. It's from housing to, so it's from bad loans. It's to the derivatives that were tied to all the loans that probably.
Well, that's the issue. The derivatives.
In the first place.
Yeah, the derivatives were tied to all these bad loans. And then so they, because the bank, the same bank could be an investment house, they would put the bad stuff in with the bank. And, when the derivatives, see, they weren't incented to do that before. They wouldn't have made all those bad loans and put put it in that, the safer side of their house. And so when that all went down, it just killed everything.
Yeah, it's, and it's one of the reasons why you hear, it's, of course, as with anything, it's also a political issue. And it's one of the reasons that you hear people saying that we should bring back Dodd-Frank, or not Dodd-Frank, but Glass-Steagall.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if you can sort of put the genie back in the bottle because it's, it's out there. And it's, well.
People make too much money on it, and so it's just too hard.
Take the politics out of it. And, I mean, what are the ramifications then for breaking up banks and forcing them to be what they were in, 1986, which was, banks on one side and investment banks on the other? Sounds nice in theory. I'm not sure that it doesn't create a whole new set of problems. And so, I try not to take a real opinion on it because, at the end of the day, I think what comes from a lot of regulations sometimes is it sort of creates, it's the law of unintended consequences.
Well, I think, you can go with less regulations, but then they have to let them fail too.
Well, I'll give you an example of regulation.
That has to come hand in hand.
It's all well intended. I believe that, for example, there were some regulations that happened, I'm going to say about 10 years ago, and not to get too deep in the weeds, but it was an attempt to make trading more transparent and to sort of give the little guy, if you will, a chance to be able to get his orders executed, at the best price that's out there. And there was a lot of stuff going on, pre-decimalization, which I mentioned a minute ago, that allowed firms to be able to really fiddle around with price, let's just say. To keep it simple, there were some regulations that were introduced, and it sounded like a great idea. On paper, it all made sense that you had all these different markets, and if Uncle Bob sends an order to me, I'm supposed to go to wherever the best price is, if it's in New York, if it's in Chicago, wherever it might be, right? And it sounds good. But in a lot of ways, that is what laid the groundwork for high frequency trading.
Yeah, so you can't, they can't predict all the things that are going to happen.
No,
so if you lay, out a process, it's that chaos theory that I was talking about. You cannot figure out every issue that's going to happen. So you lay out a process that people have to follow, and it can really mess things up.
Well, and I think too, when you're dealing with really, really smart folks, and you're dealing with a whole lot of technology, and let's not leave money out of it, because, you know, if they've got enough
money's the real reason
to pay for whatever it is that they need to do. They're going to figure out, if you just say, here's the playing field. I think that's just what capitalism is. We figure out, where can I make the most money?
The water just flows around it.
Circumstances.
Yeah. The water flows around it in a different way. It's just, it's like water. Unless you can, stop every single place.
So,
it's just going to find a new path.
At the end of the day, I guess we have to decide what it is that we want. And I think what we want is, if there's another crisis, you know, knock on wood, let's hope we never see it. But you know, if there is a downturn, that the people who maybe caused the downturn don't also end up being the only ones that are protected.
Well, and so, that's kind of what happened in the last one. Well, there's a global recession going on now. There's lots of countries that are in full-blown recession. Do you foresee, I mean, I can't see how it's not going to affect the United States, but do you think that the tech sector is going to be immune to that? Or at least they're going to be hit, but do you think it's going to be fairly healthy?
Are we talking about still fintech? Here's what
I think. Well, fintech, because the NASDAQ, I guess I kind of expanded all, to all tech, but the NASDAQ is still up a little bit as of yesterday. I haven't checked it out on the year, but all the other indexes are down. And so, you know, could it be fairly, because it's so strong, can it be a little immune and a little protected from a recession?
I would say this. Right now, technology is, you know, it's in a lot of ways driving the economy, in the sense that, come what may, I'm going to have my iPhone or my Android, you know, and even if you're not necessarily making a lot of money, I think it's such a big part of our lives to have our, you know, tablets and cell phones and these different devices, that it's just a part of what we do. And so maybe to some extent, those areas, I'd be interested to know. Christmas is coming up and the holidays are coming up. And so technology is always one of the biggest, biggest parts of Christmas spending. And I can't, so to answer your question, tech at large is probably a little bit overblown, but I don't know that I see it just, falling too much.
Well, Ross Perot used to say that the consulting industry, which is so much of, backed by computers now, it's really a computing consulting, that it's always protected because in growth, when the market's booming, people are investing in new things and growing their companies. When the market's down, they're investing in cutting costs. And cutting costs is automating your business, fixing processes and doing those things. So there's always a market for it.
Well, and you look at what happened after the crisis. I mean, look at what, since we're talking about fintech and banks, the banks have turned around. They're making more money than they ever have, but there's still a whole lot of people that are out of work. Now, that actually plays into the fintech story because if you think about it, a lot of very smart people lost their jobs as a result of the global recession. And some of them made the choice that they didn't want to get back in, running a trading desk or being a trader or whatever. And a lot of those same people have gone to work within these smaller fintech operations. And so what you're seeing now, and there's another thing that sort of plays into it, just say versus 10 years ago, it's a lot cheaper to start a technology business than it was.
We need to take a short station break, and we'll be back with Business Game Changers on the Conscious Business Radio Network in a moment.
The 24th annual WOW Conference, United We Change the World, is February 11th through the 15th. Featured guests are Dr. Christine Page on Creative Dragon Energy, Dr. Susan Shumsky will show you how to awaken your third eye, and Mira Kelly will present a two-day intensive workshop on Beyond Past Lives. Join WOW for intimate, experiential, life-changing workshops and evening presentations that will inspire you. You can choose two half-day workshops and receive one half-day workshop for free through December 31st. Join a supportive community of women on their journey to discover and develop their passions and purpose in life. Women of Wisdom is the place to be. This February 11th through the 15th, go to thewowconference.org. That's the WOW conference.org to discover all the diverse offerings WOW has to offer you.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are rejoining Marlon Weems.
And yes, so, exactly. You know, you couple those things, there's a huge pool of talent. And for the, you know, the firms to, that were interested in starting up these little technology businesses, there were a lot of engineers out there that had been laid off. There were a lot of, you know, people that understood the financial markets that had been laid off. So I think I saw not too long ago, I think the beginning of this year that New York or, you know, the U.S. had laid off something around maybe 50,000 people in financial services. So a lot of that brain power is sort of coming back around in the form of these little fintech firms.
Well, do you think what besides robo-advisors do the fintech firms do?
Oh, my gosh. You've got firms that are involved in a variety of you know types of analytics. So, for example, there are several companies out there that actually are, and it's kind of interesting now because the investment banks have realized that because they've got such a burden of regulatory issue, you know, regulatory. Just getting prepared costs a whole lot of money. And so they've had to direct a lot of their capital spend to getting ready for all these various regulatory schemes that are, you know, that are coming their way. So what's starting to happen, for example, in New York, you have what's called the Innovation Lab. And what they're doing is, you know, in New York, you've got, I think, maybe 6 investment banks that are basically funding like a startup lab for, you know, different firms to show up and sort of make their pitch about whatever their particular technology is and how it could be useful to them.
So the big players the established players are realizing this is a big market and they want to own it. And so they're funding it, or
exactly
that's not true.
And here's the thing, because a lot of these guys don't really want to work for a big Wall Street firm. They want to be independent and sort of do their own entrepreneurial thing. But I think what it's come down to is that Wall Street firms, for several reasons, I won't say that they don't have the money. They do have the money, but they've got to use it for other stuff. They used to do a lot of their own, you know, building of systems internally. And, you know, they've got systems that they've already paid millions and millions of dollars for that they've had for 20 years that they can't really just throw away. So it probably makes a whole lot more sense to outsource a lot of their, you know, a lot of their technology spend. And a lot of the innovation can be done by these guys and they can, you know, sort of work together in a way.
So basically, it's just a more focused technology company that's focused on the financial sector.
Exactly.
And whereas, like, you know, all the big, the big consulting firms focus on all the different sectors, they're just wanting somebody that's really an expert in the financial sector, who isn't bloated and can't be entrepreneurial.
Well, they can be, yeah. I mean, that's the key with these firms is that, you know, you've heard of hackathons, right? I mean, where
yeah.
these guys just get together in a room and they say, you know, okay, we've got this, you know, cloud computing here, and everything now is so much less expensive. You know, for them to be able to just sort of experiment and see what they can come up with.
Well, there's a different mindset. You know, the old consulting firms, they plod along. They're very expensive. They're business focused as well, but they're just so expensive. Whereas if you can get more of a entrepreneurial, not that these people wouldn't be super expensive too, but if you have a good developer that really understands the industry, you can get 10 times done. 10 times
exactly.
more done for the same price.
And exactly. And I think that's a lot of what's happening there. And so the other part of the puzzle is that, you know, venture capital has recognized that these companies have a lot of upside, not every single one of them, but, you know, you've heard the expression, a unicorn, you know, the companies that get these billion-dollar valuations. And so, it's, you know, in the third quarter of this year, I think, was a record quarter for venture capital investment, you know, in fintech companies, you know, and so now what's happening is the venture capital guys, you know, potentially are funding them and, you know, giving them money to start, you know, to carry on their business.
Well, that's, to me, that's the established players going in and saying, okay, we want to be part of this.
Exactly. Well, that's their job. And so,
of course,
then on, you know, and then on top of that, you also have, you know, the corporates. So, for example, places that you wouldn't expect, like Google. Google invests in lots of different technology deals. And so, the investment banks see what's happening. And, I think this last quarter might have been a record, number of fintech deals that were invested in, you know, by investment banks. So, you know, money is coming their way. And so now in the end, I think the investment banks, what they may want to do is, sort of nurture these companies along. And at some point, you know, they help them create their business and then they absorb that business into the bank in some way. Now, I'm not sure, how many of those deals will actually happen, but that's the idea.
Well, if their culture is very different, it's not going to work.
Exactly.
They're just going to kill their investment.
Therein lies the problem. So, you know, there are some of these firms, I think, that are just, you know, very happy being sort of what they are and who they are. But then there are probably others that wouldn't mind being acquired, you know, by a Goldman or a J.P. Morgan or whomever.
Well, plus if the owners make a lot of money, I'm sure they won't mind that.
Well, it's hard to feel sorry for them, isn't it?
Yes, it's very hard. Well, how do you see security being a threat? Because we all know that cyber warfare and all the security hacks going on is a major problem in almost every industry. But how do you see this being a problem in the, you know, the fintech industry?
Well, no, I actually, some of the companies that are starting to pop up with regard to financial services are actually providing solutions around cybersecurity. I think no area is untouched. I think anything that, in fact, I was talking to someone not too long ago, and they were telling me they had met with a small startup company that was their thing was. Not so much cybersecurity, but to protect them against, like, if there was like another, you know, one of these outsized market swings, a flash crash or whatever, they were basically building technology to try to figure out exactly what they needed to do to protect themselves.
Well, stop it from happening. Because if a hacker gets in there, they can.
That would be great.
Well, I think there could be algorithms that they could do and say, okay, this is happening, and then quickly reverse it or at least stop it quick. Because if a hacker got in there, they could definitely cause it. So if they don't have the stop gaps that say, okay, under these scenarios, we know this is happening, shut it down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So back to your, I guess your original question is, I think there are a lot of smart guys in these nimble little companies, and that's exactly what they're doing. Is they're addressing, I guess, what you might call different pain points, up and down the spectrum. And then on the other hand, they're also doing things like, coming up with apps to make it where you can move your money around and you don't have to go to a commercial bank anymore. So, you know, there's certainly, I guess, from the banks, investment banks and commercial banking point of view, there's some good things from all this technology, but there's also, some things that they probably wish would go away.
Well, yeah, there was a joke, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, that said that if we started with money being technology based, that and then went back to paper money, people would think that paper money was the best investment ever, or best invention ever created, because it's so secure.
Well, I'll tell you something. I saw something the other day, and I can't recall if it was someone like Elon Musk or it may have been Tim Cook that made a comment, and it was something like, I didn't get to read the article, but the headline definitely jumped out at me. And he said something like, your kids aren't even going to know what money is by the time they, grow up or whatever. And you can kind of see it going that way, where people are being incentivized not to deal in cash. And especially if you look over in Europe, I mean, every day I read the financial newspapers over there, and you'll see where, Visa, MasterCard, everyone is going to basically, cashless systems.
Well, if you're Visa or MasterCard, you sure like that, because they get a percentage of the entire trend, the whole economy. Right? So that's a huge incentive. But what needs to happen, I think, is for the debit transactions to get in line with what their cost is, and so that retail stores and everybody else they don't have to pay this huge percentage when it's just a debit transaction.
Well, it would be good to be able to move your money around without having to pay a toll to do it.
We have to take a short station break. We'll be back in a moment.
Do you want the freedom to spend more time with your loved ones? Travel the world? Live spontaneously? Get ready, because the Chip Justice Show is here. Hosts Dr. Pat Basile and Chip Justice can help you build meaningful success while embracing life. Living a life you love is the end game in this new, inspirational, and empowering show. Positive changes for a life you'll love. Tune in every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit PositiveChangeInstitute.co for more information.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Shine On Radio, Find Your Shine with Kelly, is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns in certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com.
Hello, we are back with Business Game Changers on the Transformation Talk Radio Network and Conscious Business Radio, and we are continuing our interview now.
You know.
Well, and a huge toll. If you're a retail store, you're paying a lot of money. I remember when I owned my company, Wells Fargo told me that it was illegal for me to tell customers what the percentage was that I was being charged, and I could not.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, what? Yeah, they said it was a law.
Hmm.
And bothered me a lot. I'm like, what? Why would that be a law, and why would they be able to make that a law?
I think that's called good lobbyists.
That's called really good lobbyists, because I was thinking, yeah, that made me mad, because that's just not right, right? I mean, that's not.
Well, I think things are a lot more transparent now than they were back then, because you think about it. You know, the idea of being able to send somebody money over your phone, that just, you just couldn't have even imagined that. And so, you know, now that you've got that control, you also have to be able to know what the cost is. So
exactly.
If I'm going to use PayPal, they kind of have to let me know what they're going to charge me for me to either receive money or send money or whatever.
Although retailers pay a lot. If you pay through PayPal, they're the ones absorbing the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of customers don't know that they're absorbing such a huge expense to go through PayPal. So it's still a problem, but you know, people want that convenience. I think it's just neat. You can do all your checks through your phone. You know, if you want to cash
or deposit
checks, it's so nice.
Take a picture of them and so forth.
Yes.
You know, I've never been able to fully trust that.
You haven't?
Feature. I've done it before. It's just that, you know, I kind of had a little bit of a snafu the time that I did it. I can't recall what the reason was, but it took like, you know, I could have walked to the bank and just handed them the check in less time. Let's just put it that way.
Well, see, the bank that I have to do it to isn't that close to me. And so I find it's been a lifesaver. This is really.
I can imagine. It's certainly convenient. There's no question. And it's to the point now that, you know, who even wants to write a check? But as you say, I mean, you know, we're in business, so sometimes you have to, you know, you've got a check, you've got a deposit or whatever. And as opposed to going to the bank, it's a whole lot nicer to just be able to snap a photo of it and there it goes, right?
Well, you still need checks for big transactions. I mean, you don't want, otherwise you have to wire it or, you know, if there's a $10,000.
Oh, yeah, right.
Something like that. But you used to work for Cantor Fitzgerald, correct?
I worked for, not directly for Cantor, even though I was in their building. I ran a trading desk for an affiliate of theirs.
Okay.
So we were a separate company, but we were sort of under the umbrella.
Were you with them when the trade centers went down?
No, I was not.
Because I know that was a very painful time because they lost, what, half their personnel?
It's an amazing story, really, because the last time even when I was there, they were actually a bigger company than they were pre-World Trade Center or pre-9/11. So they definitely recovered, and then
Irvin Goldman came on the show, and he built it after.
Yeah, you know, I actually got to listen to him, and I looked at the calendar. I think he and I were in the same building, maybe for a 6-month or 1-year period or something like that. We kind of
He's great. He knows he's a great person to talk to. And I liked it because he was in charge of the strategy for J.P. Morgan, for the whole $350 billion fund. And so I like to talk to him about what's going on with global finance, because there's such a huge question mark right now on what's really going on, with the reset of the dollar and things like that. But, he's a fantastic guy. I just know that when I saw that you worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, I wanted to see if you had that experience, because that was such a hard time for so many people.
I was there for 5 years, at the affiliate, and we were on, the second or third floor. And so all the Cantor people worked around us. And on 9/11 every year, we were part of the family. So people from our firm would go, down to the, 9/11 site and read the names of, people from Cantor Fitzgerald and there's so many, you would take, a dozen people, and they would just sort of take turns reading names for some period of time. And then, it was a big ceremony. We'd have a moment of silence and really sort of reflect back on a pretty, obviously a very terrible situation. I was in New York. I just, at the time, was not at Cantor Fitzgerald.
Were you far from the World Trade Centers?
I was close enough to see them fall.
Were you close enough to get all the dust and the debris?
No. I'll tell you exactly where I was. I was on, I worked at a little firm. I don't think I'd been in New York a year. And I was on the corner of 49th and 5th, which, for people that don't know, that's where the Rockefeller Center and the Christmas tree and, So I was right there working at a firm, and we were, everybody obviously knew these planes had hit, and we were trying to figure out just, what the heck to do. And I was standing literally out in the middle of the street and saw the first building fall, and I said, I'm going to get uptown.
Well, I'm sure, because you didn't know if there was a war going on or what.
No one knew what was going on. And, we had cell phones. They weren't as, prevalent as they are now, but I had a cell phone.
You couldn't get through, could you? Everybody was calling.
You could not get through.
Yeah.
And everybody was calling everybody. And so I made it to Central Park, and my cell phone kicked on. And it rang, and it was my wife.
She wanted to make sure you were okay.
Well, I had just enough time. She was also in the city, and I had just enough time to shout out a place. And then it cut off again, and that was where we ended up meeting. And so it's
what a relief to know that you guys were both.
I have to tell you, you think back on it, and it's such a just a spectacularly devastating event. It's almost hard to fathom that it really happened.
Sure.
But
were you close enough to hear the explosions that were going off?
No. I was a good ways. I was in what's called Midtown. And so, but those buildings were so huge.
They were massive. So you can't tell by looking on television,
scale. And, yeah. As a matter of fact, I lived in New Jersey at the time on the river of the Hudson, and my view was the towers. And so, what was a really, really great view turned into one that was we'd rather not have had.
It was very different. Yes. Well, how can people get hold of you? You have a website. You're Geek. What are you, Geek Trader? You got a Geek Trader handle.
My Twitter handle is Geek Trader. I guess I was kind of an early adopter to Twitter when it came out, and so as the name kind of indicates, I was a trader at the time, and so I was able to steal that name. And it's actually, I was fooling with a lot of technology, so I guess I was a little bit of a geek too.
It's okay. We've lived long enough to know now that being a geek is actually kind of cool.
It's actually kind of come into fashion.
It is, yes. So being a little nerdy is kind of cool.
Yeah. So certainly on Twitter, I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. And then of course my company, Hillcrest Strategies, hillcreststrategies.com. You can find me, find us online there.
Well, I'll have your information up on my radio page.
Oh, great. I appreciate
it. So this is great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and filling us in on what's going on in the fintech sector.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
Well, that's the conclusion of my show today, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I think that there are just a ton of changes that are still going to come, and we don't even know what they are. Just like anything else, things start changing, and then there's a wave of people adopting it, and then all these other services and businesses are offshoots of that. So it'll be really interesting to see how much this really changes that whole sector. But if you want to hear that episode, this episode again, or any other episodes, you can go to my website at sarahwestell.com. You can tell your friends about it, and they can also hear this episode or any other ones that I have. And also, if your business or your friend's business wants to advertise on my radio show, it airs in New York and Rhode Island and Connecticut and on over 90-plus podcast channels. And we are looking at taking this nationwide. So it'll just be fantastic advertising rates for you. And even so, just where I have it now, it's fantastic. So give me a call, or not give me a call, give me an email, or contact me on my LinkedIn page. You can find all my information on sarahwestall.com, and I would love to hear from you. Also, your comments. Give me your comments. So I hope everyone has a wonderful Christmas and holiday, whether you celebrate Christmas or any other religious holiday. I hope that you have a wonderful week and at least take a break and have some time with your family. So, or your friends, if you would rather do that. But I hope you have a great break anyways. So for now, everyone have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.